You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
I'm Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Friday, May 29th, episode 3961, brought to you by Spalding Fly Predators. Good morning, horse world. Well, I'm happy to report that Jamie and I will be back on Monday morning. Jennifer and I, and all of the Horse Lovers Cruisers, should be in Port in Vancouver this morning and flying home today. Of course, the saddest day of every cruise is the last night, knowing that you have to get back to the real world in the morning, and that no one will be making your meals for you, morning, lunch, dinner, every day, eat whatever you want. Back to the real world. We hope you've enjoyed all the programming that we put together for you. It was a lot of work getting it all done ahead of time, but we did have fun doing it. At least once during these breaks, I try to do a one-on-one and highlight a podcaster friend of mine from outside the horse world. Today is one of my first podcasting friends. I think I met him 11 years ago. Jen and I had dinner with him and his wife, Sarah, last week in Jacksonville when we were up there for a show. If you are a trivia lover, then this is the show for you. Jonathan Oakes is the host and founder of the Trivia Warfare and was inducted into the Trivia Hall of Fame. Like Horses in the Morning is to the horse podcast world, Trivia Warfare is to the trivia world. We'll be right back with this uninterrupted interview with Jonathan right after this.
Tired of toxic fly sprays that don't work? Bye Bye Insects is the fly spray that delivers botanical ingredients and powerful protection. The science-backed formula smells amazing, works even better, and is safe for both you and your horse. No toxic chemicals, no compromise, just comfort you can count on, in the barn or on the trail. Bye Bye Insects by Spalding Labs. Get yours now at spalding-labs.com.
Jonathan, my friend, thanks for joining me.
Hey, Glenn, I am glad to be here.
This is so much fun. You know, you and I have known each other for what, 10, 11 years now?
11 years, I think. We met in January-ish of 2016, probably.
Your show must have been pretty new then.
It was, yeah. We started Trivial Warfare in February of 2015.
So it was about a year in. And so let's back up a little bit. Were you always a trivia buff?
You know, I would have to say yes. And I can remember distinctly being a child. My family would gather at my grandmother's house for Christmas and Easter and all the holidays, right? And my family loved to play games, but the adults wouldn't let the kids play with them. And the game of choice for my entire childhood was Trivial Pursuit. And so I was an 8-year-old, a 9-year-old, a 10-year-old on the outside looking in, and I would literally just sit nearby so I could listen. And if I was quiet, they would let me. I was probably 13 or 14 years old when they finally let me and my brother and some of our cousins join the game. And I immediately was the best player at the table because I remembered everything that I'd ever heard from all of their games from the past. So for me, it was just like answering the questions that I'd heard before.
Did they have every Trivial Pursuit model ever made? I think there were like 20 of them, weren't there?
Yeah, but this was in the 80s. So okay. Back then there was only just the one.
I remember that. We had that too. We had four boys in the house and my parents hated playing games with us, so we'd play with each other. Yeah, I love that, you know, it's kind of the same in our world. You know, kids grow up and their parents ride and they end up taking up riding or not, right? But that's where they fall in love with it. So you fell in love with it because you weren't allowed to play. If they let you play or force you to play, you probably wouldn't have.
I probably wouldn't have. You're right.
Yeah.
And it became a lifelong thing for me. I remember there was in high school, we had a brain brawl team that I was a part of, and that was essentially just like a quiz bowl competitive trivia against other schools. And I did that the whole time I was in high school. And then after that, you know, I kind of faded away from it in my early college years and then working. But I met a friend in the early 2000s. His name was Chris, my best friend in the world. And Chris and I realized we both liked trivia, and we knew that the restaurants around town sometimes had trivia games, and we decided to meet up one night and do it. And that was our first pub quiz, and we fell in love with it, and I've been playing ever since.
Are you an alcoholic because of it? I mean, you spend all the time in bars.
I am not, but it's okay. Funny you say that, because I'm less than a month away from recording an After Dark episode where every guest has to be very drunk and you play trivia drunk. Yes, that is a thing that we do.
I didn't know that, but that's funny. And so... what, you know, what makes a good trivia player? You're just well-read? Is that, you can't really study this, right?
You can definitely study this.
Really?
So I have a ton of friends who have been able to get casted on Jeopardy and have participated and played. And I have some friends, one of my friends, Kit, actually works for me on the show. She supports us in the back end, and she was a 3-day champion. And these folks, they flashcard. They're obviously reading everything, but there's intentional things that you can do around memorization to help with things that you know were going to come up. So there's that kind of player. There's the kind of player who studies. And then there's somebody like me. I don't study. I'm not doing this to add work to myself. And for me, I just always had a really distinct memory, the ability to memorize things just by hearing them. Because I guess the way that some people's brain works is through connection. And so when I hear something, I like to describe it as... like if my brain is shaped like a spider web and I learn something new, it's like plucking a string on a spider web and the whole web shakes with the ramifications of how that new thing that I learned fits with everything else that I know. And for the most part, at least for most of my life, if it goes into that web, it doesn't come out. It stays there permanently. And it's only now that I'm getting older that I am much less likely to remember everything than I used to be.
It's in there. It's just harder to pluck it out.
I have to. My style, and this actually works really well for my show. My style is that I have to reason out how I get to an answer now. You're right. It's in there somewhere, but I've got to kind of out loud follow the path of, well, I know this and I know that. And if those things are true, then I bet the answer is this. And that style of answering drives people crazy and also gets me a lot of credit and it makes for a very fun listening experience, because it's not just somebody who knows everything. It's somebody who literally doesn't until the moment that they do.
Your show is kind of fun, too. For those that haven't heard it, check it out. It's Trivial Warfare. And you were really, you came into this kind of like I did. I came into doing the horse podcast because there wasn't any other horse podcasts. And you were kind of, there was a gap in your market at that point, too.
There sure was. This was, I had a show recommended to me because I had played pub quiz for a long time. Around 2013, a friend had recommended a show called Good Job Brain. And before that, the only podcast I'd ever listened to was the fantasy sports podcast that ESPN used to do. And so I tried this show, and it was awesome. I really loved it. But it's for people who are gathering information and sharing interesting information. And it's story-based, and it has a good dynamic of the people. And I really loved it. But the one thing that they don't really do is compete. And I like competition. I like winning and I like losing. I like having a risk of losing because it makes winning feel good.
Well, and that's true of the listeners want some drama there too, right? I mean, they listen because they want to, especially your show, they want that competition aspect of it.
I would say that the people who listen to my show do. Yeah. There are some people that don't.
Yeah.
There's some people that prefer just kind of a passive thing and the engagement between the people is what they like. But many people, especially trivia people, tend to like competing. They like to know Who knows more?
I've been on a lot of cruises and a lot, which really, by the way, have bad trivia, but they do it all the time.
It's terrible trivia.
But, I agree. But I will tell you this, it's terrible trivia, but you cannot get in the room for any of the trivia things on a cruise because it's packed.
Yeah. Yeah.
People love it.
It's popular. Yeah. It really is popular. I think that what I've learned in the years that I've been doing this is that there is a certain type of person, and usually it's people who are somewhat slightly on the autism spectrum. And I don't say that in a negative way. Through trivia, I've learned that I'm slightly on the autism spectrum.
Because that's how you can remember all that crap.
and have the desire to go dig deep and learn all this stuff. It's a thing that I've come to realize that my people, quote unquote, are kind of these folks who have these quirky hobbies like loving trains or loving how this works or technical stuff. A lot of our technical people are a little bit on the autism spectrum. And it turns out that way more people than I would have ever guessed are in this spectrum.
Well, everybody has something, right? We all have our thing that we're really good at, and it's usually we're really good at it because we're really interested in it, and it comes easier to us. Yeah, and, you know, definitely. I can totally picture what you're saying, for sure. You know, no question about it. I had a photographic memory, and a lot of my listeners won't know this. I had a photographic memory until I was about in early 30s when I got Lyme disease. And mine was
really
mine was neurological, and it went downhill from there. I have chronic Lyme, I still battle it, but that's when that was one of the most frustrating things in my life, because I never had to write anything down. I was a salesperson on the road 10 appointments a week, and I didn't have a calendar.
That's crazy.
Sometimes I wrote down the addresses if I wasn't sure, and this is before GPS. And I just didn't need it because I could remember it all. And if I had credit cards, I knew the numbers the first time I looked at them. I didn't have to ever look at them again. You know, I had that kind of memory. But then when I lost it, it was so frustrating for me. It was debilitating because I had to learn how to live life all over again.
Yeah, so, I bet you did.
You know, so I was kind of there with you. And then I had that skill that I don't have anymore. So I get that. I get where you are with that.
Hold on. I want to stay there for a second, because I know you to be a very smart person, and you don't have to have a perfect memory to be a smart person. But I had a similar experience in a different way that resonates when you say that, because when I was younger, I mentioned earlier being 13, 14, I was kind of precocious. I was way smarter than I am now. But I got into drugs at the end of high school, early years of college, and some significant ones. And I can tell you that it is very clear to me the before and after of messing around with those drugs at that time period. I probably dropped 10 to 15 IQ points. I mean, I went from never forgetting anything and just knowing to I have to double check myself. It doesn't come quickly anymore. I'm slower to remember things. The difference is dramatic, and it's so frustrating. I just want to go back and smack myself.
You know,
we
joke about, dude, drugs, you're going to kill brain cells. It's true, right? I mean, it's true.
It's real. Yeah. It's real.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, so, you know, we were both for different reasons in the same boat. And you went on too. I mean, you had an IT career up until recently and the whole thing. So, I mean, you know, that's the same thing. So what made Trivial Horses in the Morning became the show in the horse world? What made Trivial Warfare become the show in the trivial world?
You know, it comes down to, I think, my personal desire for personal connection and the way that that resonates with the type of people who like what we do. And so the show is the show. It's what it would always be. And it would have been solid. It would have been a good show regardless of any kind of personal connection. But I was in a place in my life when I started the show where I had just divorced. I had just gotten a divorce 6 months before. In fact,
great time to change your life and start a show.
right? The show was one of many things that I was trying out as a newly single adult in my 30s. I was picking up guitar and trying to learn how to play guitar. I was doing antiquing and estate sales.
You were trying to get that commercial for the most interesting man in the world right there.
I was trying to figure out who I was and what I wanted to do. And with my time, because I had so much more time than I had ever had before. And so we started the show and I was pretty lonely. You know, I didn't have a ton of friends. And very early on, like very early, within the first 15 episodes, we'd only been doing it for a few months. And local folks who worked with me and Chris, I mentioned earlier, we started this show together. We founded this together after playing pub quiz together for many years. Within 15 episodes, our friends Ben and Carmella, who were more acquaintances, who worked in the same place that we worked, they were like, hey, we would love to do this. We want to be a part of what's happening here. And they came on, and all of a sudden, those became great friendships. And then I remember about a year in, I was convinced to start a Facebook group. And I started this Facebook group and I was terrified. I was so scared that I would create this group and it would just be me and four other people because we're the only ones who are going to participate.
I think and you and that I had this conversation at a Podfest.
Yeah.
Back then.
I was worried that it was going to invalidate me essentially and show me that nobody cared or nobody liked me. And that group has 3,500 people in it right now. That group allowed our listeners to meet each other. And these are people who don't always have expansive friend groups because they're a little bit on the spectrum, right?
They're geeks and like you and I. Yeah,
exactly. And it gave this type of person a way to meet other people who were like them online. Glenn, and I, just fast forwarding, we did an event last month. I called them TW Takeovers. And about 6 months ago, I said, hey, guys, we're going to Pittsburgh. We're going to do a Pittsburgh weekend. And I worked with one of our listeners to put it together. And we just did this. We had 50 people show up. And these 50 people spend the weekend together. And everybody who goes to one of these things now has their 50 best friends that they never had before, right? These relationships are so real. And we go and see each other. We have people who visit each other all the time. We have people who've gotten married. We have people whose best friends in the whole world they met through the show. It has become a place that connected a certain type of people that did not have anywhere in their lives where they could connect with other people like them.
And that's what I think the difference between podcasting, I'll even throw YouTube into it now because there's YouTube creators that create these kind of communities. That was never, that didn't happen with magazines. That didn't happen with TV shows because you didn't have a personal relationship with the people on those shows. Whereas when we're doing podcasts, everybody listening to me right now is my best friend. Right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not listening to a show, one cunt for the content, stay for the host, right? You're not listening to a show unless you feel like the host is your friend, right? You're not hanging around.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, I think, in the communities we build and the communities that develop around a TV show or something like that. Because, you're not getting to know the actors there. They're not coming out and meeting you. They're not hanging around with you for a weekend with, 50 other fans. That's just not happening. Mm-hmm. So I think that is the difference in our kind of content that we create.
I think you're 100% right. It's a much more personal experience. There's a popular meme that the caption is something like me listening to podcasts, and it's a wall with a graphic on it, and the graphic of this wall has like four friends hanging out and having a good time together, and then there's a person sitting next to the wall pretending to be one of the group of the people on the wall. And that's what it's like listening to a podcast. These are these friends having fun and I'm right there with them.
That's right. And you're invested in them too. You know, we do a daily show. So I think that even amplifies it tenfold, right? Is because we're there every day, I think that just amplifies that personal connection. But that's something you did well from the beginning. They're called your army, aren't they? The Trivial Warfare
Army. Trivial Warfare Army.
Yeah, that's yeah. right. I remember that. I was actually, to let listeners know, I was actually on your show once or twice.
Yeah.
And I beat you, but it was only because the horse questions came up and I actually knew the answer. But that was the only reason. That's the only reason.
We have had, we are on episode 580 something right yeah. now. And the other than Kentucky Derby winners and horse racing stuff, the horse questions have shown up maybe four or five of those episodes. We had more horse questions per capita on the show you participated in. We probably have more horse questions on that one show than we've had on every
Thank
other show.
Thank you for that,
combined.
By the way. It's the only thing I know about, so I appreciate that. So how do you talk about questions? Let's talk about that, because I think this is fascinating, too. So you do have regular players, but you also have listeners that play, and you get them involved that way as well. How do you put the questions together? I mean, you've done a million questions at this point. How do you put the questions together so you know, one, they're not too hard, and also they're not too easy? Because too hard, nobody gets any. It's not a fun game to listen to. Too easy, that's not fun to listen to either. So there's that sweet spot in the middle, but how do you figure out where the sweet spot is?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say that Trivial Warfare plays hardish. Like, it's probably, it's Trivial Pursuit level questions and perhaps the next half step up from there, because that's what our hardcore audience wants.
Yeah, I think you're a step up from pub questions. You're 10 steps up from cruise questions.
100% yes.
Yeah.
I was just meeting, yesterday I had a meeting with one of our new hosts, Robert. And Robert is a pub quiz host, and he's written a lot of questions for different companies. And he's been a listener of ours for a while. He's a great guy, and I'm excited to work with him. And he did a game the other day, one of his first times hosting. And I like our scores to be somewhere between like 120 to 150, somewhere in that range. And the score at the end of that game was something like 90 to 60. It was really hard. And so because he's new, I wanted to take some time with him and go through the questions. And we talked about things like making sure that there are little things inside of a question that allow multiple ways into the answer, right? So when you write a question,
so
you want to make
sure. Question. Basically.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes the clue might be a pun. Sometimes the clue might be a word, a phrase that is unnecessary in the question, but it gives you a little bit of extra information. Sometimes a clue might be eliminating the two things that most people are going to think of first. So the question might say, other than this and this, what is the blah, blah, blah? And by eliminating the two biggest things, you give people the chance to get it right, whereas before they would just guess the biggest thing. So we do things like that. We make sure we have multiple ways in to an answer on every question. A lot of times we use a category name that's a hint. So the category name of a question on a recent game was The Incredible Journey, right? And the answer to that question ended up being Homeward Bound, which is the title and subtitle of a movie from the 90s. So if you remembered, hey, Incredible Journey, that makes me think of Homeward Bound. And this song they're asking for, that might be Homeward Bound. Yeah, so we do a lot of that. Well,
and that's partly because, yeah, you guys are playing, but that's not as important as me sitting at home. If I'm not getting any of the answers myself as I'm guessing and playing along, then it frustrates me as a listener.
Yep. Yes. And nobody's great at everything, right? The person who's great at science may not be great at sports, and the person who's great at history might not be great at literature. And so we make sure that our questions are varied. We don't ever focus in on one topic over another. We don't give preference to that. We have math questions. We have science questions. We have pop culture, movies, TV, radio, whatever the case is. And so you're likely to find questions in our show that you're interested in, and then clues and other things like that can help you in the places where you may not be good at.
And you're kind of, if I remember right, you're kind of the king of president questions. Am I right? Do I remember that right?
I did take, and I made an effort to learn all of the presidents in order so that I wouldn't miss. A lot of times a clue in a question will be something like, what president in the year, blah, blah, blah. And then they give the other information. And I might not know the other information, but if you tell me the year, there's a good chance I can say what the who the president was in that year because I took the time to learn it.
Okay. Are you one of those weird people you could tell me right now the president's in order?
Yeah.
Okay, do it. I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
Okay. Let's hope I don't mess up, right?
I won't know Washington. The difference, so you'll be fine.
Yeah, you got Washington, Adams, Jefferson, Madison, Monroe, Quincy Adams, Jackson, Van Buren. Then you have Tyler. No, sorry. Then you have William Henry Harrison. Then you have Tyler. Then you have Polk. Then you have Pierce. Then you have Taylor. Then Fillmore. Then Buchanan. Then Lincoln. Lincoln's 16. He's like a tent peg, right? 16 gets you there.
Okay.
After Lincoln, you have Johnson, and then you have Ulysses S. Grant. And this is the beardos. These are the guys with the big beards. You have Grant. You have Rutherford B. Hayes. You have James A. Garfield. Now we're around 1881, 1882. He dies in office. It goes to Chester A. Arthur. Then you have Grover Cleveland, Benjamin Harrison, who's William Henry Harrison's grandson. Then you go back to Cleveland, who had a second term with Harrison in between. Then you hit William McKinley, who was president in 1900. Then it goes to Teddy Roosevelt, William Howard Taft. You get Woodrow Wilson. The hardest group to remember is usually right after Wilson. It goes Warren G. Harding, who died in office. Then Calvin Coolidge took over. Then it goes to Herbert Hoover, who created the Great Depression. After Hoover, you get to...
Yeah, that was his shining moment right there.
Yeah, right. We've named a dam after him. It's like, damn, I wish you hadn't done the Great Depression. Then you have FDR, Franklin Roosevelt. Then you get to Truman. You get to Eisenhower. Then Kennedy and Johnson. And then Nixon takes over. Nixon goes to Ford, Carter. Then Reagan. You have George H.W. Bush, Clinton. And you know the rest from there.
Well, that's amazing that you did that. Because some of those presidents in there are just not very well known. I mean, you're going to forget them.
you have to learn. It has to be intentional to learn the grouping between Tyler, because you have the Tippecanoe and Tyler 2 slogan gets you both of those with Harrison and then Tyler. And then between Tyler and Lincoln is so forgettable.
Yes.
These are one-term presidents who didn't accomplish a lot. And then there's the grouping in between Lincoln and Roosevelt gets muddy for people. And then from Wilson up to FDR gets muddy for people. So you have to be really intentional about learning those. For me, it was really helpful not just to learn their names or in their order, but I learned, well, what was happening at the time? What was the basic years? And so you notice as I did it, I helped myself by reminding myself.
Yep.
Exactly.
Which was interesting to hear, too, your process. You know, I know why you were saying it, and it was perfect. So let me ask you, let me switch gears a little bit. Do you ever try to get mainstream celebs on? Have you had celebrities on?
You know what? We've had tons and tons of Jeopardy players. In fact, one of the cool things about our listeners and our grouping of people who have become friends is that it allowed the everyday pub players like me to engage with the folks that we got to see on TV on Jeopardy and other game shows. And so now your friends is part of this group and your personal friends go on game shows all the time. And it's this really wild thing. And so we have a lot of that, but no, we haven't really tried to chase after celebrity. It's never really been any kind of important focus for us.
So trivia, like anything else, goes in cycles. Would you say from the time you started to now that now it's more popular than ever, or is it waning? You know, where are you at with that cycle?
I think that it's just as popular as ever, but the cycle that's been happening over the course of the time that we've been doing the show is that when we started, trivia had essentially a canon. There was a set of things that everybody learned who played Trivial Pursuit on their board games and watched Jeopardy and did their pub quizzes, and the same kinds of things would be asked. And so I was a master at that canon. I could walk into a restaurant and play a trivia game by myself and routinely win. against tables with 5, 6, 7, 8 people because I knew the stuff I needed to know to win those games, right? Now, over the last 10 years, we've had a huge shift in terms of what types of things are being asked about, right? We pay a line, and we've tried to be on the cutting edge of this at Trivial Warfare. It's like the canon of old trivia is old white dude trivia. Those were the people playing the trivia games.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, and so we've tried to be very intentional about asking questions about things that women did in the world or that women care about or the different races or ethnicities. We've tried to open up, and I've seen this all over the world. You see it in ViewWatch 20 year ago Jeopardy versus Jeopardy today. It's vastly different. And in that situation, what's happened is I've gone from being a top level player at a given pub quiz to on my show, I'm an above average to good player, but I'm not the best player. I'm not even the best player out of our hosts anymore because time keeps moving. We've had 10 years of things that have happened that I'm not really a current events person. I don't like watching the news. So I really struggle with that stuff. Or there's just new information about things that were always viable trivia, but the people writing the questions didn't care about. And so we've tried to expand that. And that's been the biggest shift in that world, I think, over the last 10 years.
Were you the first podcaster to be inducted into the Trivia Hall of Fame? First of all, yes, everybody, there is a Trivia Hall of Fame. And is this Las Vegas?
It was in Las Vegas. Yeah. It sure was. And I can't say that I was the first. I was tied with three others who were my co-hosts at the time.
Okay, so you all got inducted.
We got inducted together. It was myself, it was Chris Hollister, it was Carmilla Smith, and it was Ben Young.
Was that after putting your heart into this for a long time?
It was so rewarding, Glenn. It was so rewarding. I remember we were 3 years in, and within 3 years, the community existed. There are so many. Now, we keep adding to the community, and people keep finding us and making new friends. But we had a strong core, and that's primarily the reason that we were recognized. It wasn't just, hey, this person has a podcast. Well, at that point, lots of podcasts were starting to spring up, right? It was, hey, these people who have done this show have created community in a space where community was non-existent for most people. There might be like a Jeopardy Facebook group for former contestants, but it was nothing like what we've done. And so I remember hearing rumors that, hey, someday you guys might be in here. And I would always just poo-poo it. And I would just say, I mean, sure, maybe if whatever. But when it happened, it really felt like a recognition of us putting ourselves out there, not trying to sound like we're smart. Not trying to sound like we're superior, not trying to present ourselves in a specific way, but instead being honest,
being relatable.
Yep. And that allowed people to gravitate towards us and build relationships that are, I believe that's the reason that we were recognized, because we created in this space a permanent community now.
Well, congratulations for that, by the way.
Thank you.
I think people have to remember, too, that when we both started, we were making this crap up. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. The early days of podcasting. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just doing what we thought was right. We had no idea if it was or not. I mean, you just did it because but that also allowed us to not have rules. We could do it the way we wanted to do it. There were no unwritten rules even. There were just no rules.
Glenn, I remember getting flack and recognition for the same thing in podcasting. So I would go to the podcast conferences that you would go to, which is how we became friends. And for a few years there, I exerted myself to speak. You know, I did the keynote at PodFest 1 year, and I did multiple sessions at other conferences, Podcast Movement. And the thing that people wanted to hear me talk about was my financial model for Trivial Warfare. And essentially, The financial model has my listeners paying to play. They get the chance to come on the show based on their patronage. And there was a very vocal group who was anti, you should never make your listeners pay for anything. You should never, you're paying for this to do for them, etc. And it felt like this was this ugly thing that in order to come on your show, somebody would have to pay you. But the logic of the business model has been borne out. It's a patronage system. They're paying for certain things that they get as a patron. And one of those things is the chance to come on the show in the future. And it's worked out beautifully. Yeah, but that's an example of, it's kind of the Wild West.
I got the same crap because I was taking sponsors before other people, before anybody else was taking sponsors, we had sponsors. Uh-huh. And I got the same crap. It was the same thing. We weren't doing it for the art of it.
Do y'all not want to make a living? Spending a lot of time and money to do this.
I work 100 hours a week. Time. I really wanted to make some money doing it.
Right. But,
and by the way, all those that were doing it for the art of it aren't around anymore. So there's that.
But if I had done it for the art of it, I wouldn't be around anymore because it's too much work.
And that I don't want that to come across negative or wrong either. Jamie and I love doing the show in the morning, but we also like paying the bills and feeding our horses. So there's that, there is two sides to everything you do in life. And you always have to weigh, is this worth the time? And time is money, right? It's the old trope, time is money. Well, it's true. And you and I have spoke about this. We spoke about this at dinner last week. The biggest enemy we have is time. That's our biggest enemy. It's not money. It's not anything else. It's not technology. It's not any of that. It's time. That's our biggest enemy. It always has been.
When I've sacrificed every second Saturday, every other Saturday for 11 years has been given to this show. Think about the number of days of things in the Saturdays. These are days that I would do things with people, right? And that's not even the editing. That's not the work of the show. That's just the recordings.
Sacrifice. We're going to have to end soon, but I actually want to bring that up because I'm going to give you some props. So, and listeners know this, we record the show in the morning, Horses in the Morning, Most of them, we do it that way. And then within a half an hour, I have it edited because we record it as live. The only break we take is to bring the guest on. So if we have one or two guests, we take the break to bring the guests on, say hi to them, get them set up and go. And then I edit that and the show's out within a half an hour of us being done. But you're taking how many hours to edit one of your shows?
Well, the recording itself is between 3 hours and 3.5 hours for each episode. And editing that, it's about 10 hours.
Good. I'd shoot myself. I would never do it. I wouldn't have my ADD would kick in on me. I'd be done for. God bless you, man.
It's a challenge. Well, When I was working my full-time job at the same time as doing this, I eventually got to a point with our patronage that I could pay for an editor. And so for a few years, it was really nice. I used our friend Joel Sharpton for a few years.
Yeah.
Love Joel. He did a great job. And it's only recently now that I'm unemployed from the IT perspective and that I'm digging in full-time with this work that I've taken it back. And boy, is it a load. Every time I want to spend time working on the new stuff that I'm trying to do to make myself money, I'm always challenged by the amount of time I need to spend editing. It's always like, okay, I've got to do that first.
And, I spoke at one of the very early PodFests, and I got some crap for this. I did a keynote, if I remember right. And I said, I got a question. And the question was, how much time does it take? Especially about The Daily Show, right? How much time does it take? And I said it takes 10 to 12 hours for every hour you're on the air and pre and post production. If you include everything from booking guests to marketing to posting to social media, everything, it's 10 to 12 hours for every hour on your air. And then all these guys came up to me after and said, well, I only take 10 minutes. And I didn't say
not
to them.
Not a very good show.
Exactly. I didn't say that to them. But what I wanted to say, and you won't be here in 6 months. And guess what? you and I are still here because we take 10 to 12 hours for every hour we're on the air, and they're not here anymore. And it's because to put out a good product that people actually want to listen to make our show sound like it's improv for an hour, there's a hell of a lot of work that goes into that. It's the prep that makes us sound that way because we come in prepared for what we're going to do. It goes boom, 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 recorded as live. Because we're prepared. And it's when it's the three guys with beer in the basement that don't last long because they don't have that prep and it sounds like it. So,
yeah. And not just that, but how are they going to find their audience if they're not doing the work to get their thing out into the world in a way beyond just putting it on a podcast?
The podcast
will live in silence on iTunes or Spotify with nobody listening. It'll be there, but nobody can find it.
In a way, you and I were luckier in that we got into our niches when there wasn't a lot of competition, so we were it. That was a positive and negative at the time, too, because also nobody knew how to listen to a damn podcast at that time. We spent a lot of time educating people how to listen to podcasts, and then...
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and then when that finally caught up, we started getting competition, and competition in the early days was good because it taught people how to listen to podcasts, and they never listened to just one, so they would look for other trivia or horse podcasts. Then it got to the point where COVID came along, and then everybody had a podcast, and then it got cluttered. So I would say I'm glad I'm not starting one now because I think it is more cluttered and it would be harder to get found.
There is a benefit to being first. I can't say I was the first trivia show because I wasn't, but I was the first competitive trivia show.
Yep.
And that has benefited me the entire time that I've been doing this.
I agree. And you know me, I got the name The Geek because I always wanted to be first at everything I did because I got bored if I wasn't. So it was my ADD that caused that. I just always wanted to be the one figuring it out. And then I would get really bored after I figured it out because then it was easy. This is the only job I've had for this long, 18 years. I've never had a job for 18 years because I just got bored. But, you know, this one, you know why I give full credit? You know, this is going out in Horses in the Morning, and you know Jamie, my co-host. It's because of Jamie. You know, how many co-hosts have been together for 4,000 episodes? We probably are the only ones that have been the same two for that length of time. And it's because of her. You know, that she liked doing it with me. I like doing it with her. We like hanging out together. It's our therapy. And we really look forward to doing the show together. Otherwise, you couldn't do this for that long.
Nope. I could. If it was not for Chris, Ben, and Carmella for the first 300 episodes, it was just us. And they would come over. It's before COVID. We would record everything in person. They'd be in my house recording in my apartment. In the old days, I used to have to set up and tear down the studio every time we recorded. It was a real pain. And now we got to expand our cast. I have Nikki and Nick, and I have Aaron, and I can't even name them all now, but these are Zakia and Robert, these are my closest relationships now, are with my hosts because they were exceptional people who were also people I wanted to spend time with.
When people ask me, how do you hire all the hosts? And I think we've had 60 or 70 over the years. I said, first thing we do is determine, would you want to have dinner with them and enjoy it? Would you enjoy dinner with them? Mm-hmm. And if the answer was, then don't hire them. They shouldn't be working with you. Because you have to really like these people.
You really do. They have to be interesting all on their own.
Yes.
They have to be interesting when you're not around.
And the second thing I always said, funny you bring that up, is they have to be better than you. Hire people that are better than you. Jamie's better than me. She's better than me. She's a better storyteller than I am. I might be a better interviewer than she is, but overall, she's the entertaining one. You know, and it was weird for me coming into that with Jamie. You'll appreciate this because I always tend to be the funny, entertaining one. And when I came in with Jamie, you know, I was the straight man. She's the entertaining one. So, you know, that was a tough transition too, actually.
You know, we have a good guy, bad guy dynamic that we've done on the show just because it makes things more interesting. And for hundreds of episodes, I was the bad guy. I wasn't mean, but I would be a little cocky. I'd make little snide comments, and that would make people root for my co-hosts. And I was okay with that. And then I brought on one of my best friends now, Nick. And Nick just naturally fits that bad guy role so well. that it's shifted. Now I am the good guy and Nick is the bad guy. And our audience takes such joy in hating Nick. And Nick is a great guy. He is one of my best friends for a very good reason. He's a great guy. But our audience takes the greatest joy at hating Nick that it's become its own meme. It's amazing.
Well, every TV show has that guy, right? Has that guy you love to hate because you need it.
Yeah. It adds a dynamic.
And now you're finally
you
loved
have.
After all these years, Jonathan.
I know. I get to be the good guy.
Where can people find your stuff?
You know what? TrivialWarfare.com or OaksMediaGroup.com. Either way gets you there. And I encourage, if you have any interest in trivia or any interest in trivia people, come listen to a show. We're on every podcast app. We are Trivial Warfare, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed that chat and getting to know somebody outside the horse world. If you're a trivia fan, I am sure you will enjoy his show. Jamie and I will be back with you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody, and be safe.